Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Two down, two to go. Welcome into our third hour of Sports Talk here on WWL, AMFMN.com, the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. I'm Christian Garrick. We're ranking the top 28 games between LSU and the New Orleans Saints. Obviously 12 for LSU, 16 for the New Orleans Saints. Right now we are at 20. We'll get to those in a few moments. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Which game on LSU's schedule are you looking forward to the most? Which game on the Saints' schedule are you looking forward to the most? 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. For me, I like that Eagles game. I like the fact that the defending Super Bowl champions are coming to town. Sure, you're going to get excited about Atlanta on Thursday night, Thanksgiving night. But that Eagles game, I think that has a potential to be a really, really good ball game and a really exciting atmosphere in New Orleans when they come to town. For LSU, it's always Bama, right? LSU-Alabama. If they can somehow pull off an upset and beat Alabama in Tiger Stadium, would be huge for the LSU Tigers. So those are my answers. I want yours at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. Big news in Wimbledon today. Roger Federer bounced from the tournament. Mark Menard, Bobby, is a big-time tennis fan and a fan of Wimbledon. That's happened, maybe two or three times in his life where he's been up two sets?
Yeah, 269 different matches he's been up two sets to none, and only three times has he lost a match like that, and that happened today.
Well, that would be must-see TV as far as if you're a casual tennis fan.
Sure.
Because, realistically, you look at the U.S. Open and all the different, world tournaments, that the French Open, whatever, that you look at Wimbledon, that's kind of like the Super Bowl of tennis. And I think the lackluster excitement about Wimbledon, because can you remember Jimmy Connors?
Yeah.
And all that?
Gonna have Americans in it.
Yes. It's like, right or wrong, who are the top players in the role? Look
at that. They got one this year, right?
That's right. John Isner is into the semifinals. He was the ninth seed. And he gets into the semifinals today. He's going to play Kevin Anderson, who is the eighth seed. Neither of them have ever been in the Wimbledon semifinals. And so this is the first time for both of them. And the interesting thing about this match is that Kevin Anderson, 6'8", but John Isner, 6'10".
Wow.
So that's going to be
basketball players basically on a tennis court.
That's going to be some hard serves in that game. A lot of aces and not a lot of returns.
Well, Christian, the net feels like it's probably at their shins, where you would feel like it's at your chest.
At my neck.
You know, when you charge the net, are you trying to serve over? No, those are big tennis players. But you look at Rafael Nadal. I mean, look at his ups and downs and how consistent he's been and just winning, especially he was dominant on clay, and then Kenny went on grass. And, I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm going to say Mallorca. He's not actually from the mainland of Spain. He's from an island off of Spain. Mallorca, if I'm pronouncing it right. And he has a complex out there to promote tennis. It is like unbelievable, because that's where he came from, and that's his background. So you look at an individual player, like for instance, Cristiano Ronaldo. We all know Real Madrid, Portugal, what he's accomplished. He's like the LeBron James of the world. I would say if you go to each country around the world, he's probably more well-known than even LeBron James. Even though basketball is international, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo's on that level. You know, Messi, who plays for Barcelona from Argentina. But the point being, you know how they find you wherever you're at? Cristiano Ronaldo's not even from the mainland of Portugal. He's from an island that is a part of Portugal, and they found him. And now he's no longer with Real Madrid. He's with Juventus Professional League. And my understanding, and I want to say it's $30-something million a year he's making, and they call it, it's not a trade. I don't know if it's transfer, some soccer fan can tell me what actually they call it when you go from one professional team to the next. But I heard the story behind the scenes and why he probably left Real Madrid and left Spain, even though he's from Portugal. You know, you play international, you play in different countries. And left Real Madrid to go to Juventus because the country of Spain was so hard on him on his taxes. And I don't know the exact number. I don't know why 18 million is coming to mind, but it was tax evasion. And he had settled with Spain, so he said, well, screw them. They're trying to screw me. And I'm going to go to Italy. They might be a little more friendly on my earnings as far as the taxes I have to pay.
The taxes and the earnings.
So he went over to Juventus.
You see what I'm holding here?
You stole my green highlight.
Are you okay? Are you all right? This is like your whoopee, man. If I take this away from you, you're going to freak out?
A pink one or a yellow one. I can.
Yeah, I know you have plenty of them.
He's going to get back at you all day because every conversation, he's going to turn it back to soccer.
Oh, yeah. He's done that. You're right. He's turned it back to soccer almost every conversation. You're right, Mark.
I'm trying to broaden Christian's horizons.
I don't want my horizons broadened.
You need to be. Come on.
No, I don't want them to be.
You know, don't be in a bubble, Christian.
I'm not in a bubble.
You got to get out.
Soccer's in the bubble.
You got to get outside the bubble. No, you got to get outside your comfort zone.
No, it's not about that. Look, whatever.
Christian, you look like a soccer player. You should embrace that. I tell you that all the time.
Yeah, but I'm not a soccer player. So
what if you were?
At least you're not a jockey anymore.
Moving up. I look like he wants to make me a jockey. I look like a soccer player.
Nah, he's too heavy for a jockey right now. We'd have to starve me, right?
Yeah,
starve a few pounds. But
Patrick and Metairie, coming back to you. This is Sports Talk here on WWLAMFM.com. There's the lame duck call. If you want to win the family four-pack of tickets.
Lame duck, that's the right answer. Lame duck call.
Tickets to the Louisiana Sportsman Show, Deer, Duck, and Fishing Expo at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, July 20th through the 22nd. Call right now, 504-260-WINS. You got to call 260-9467 right now. You're the eighth caller. You win with WWL. Welcome back to Sports Talk. Patrick and Metairie. What's going on, Patrick? You're on WWL.
Good, yeah. Hey, guys. I know y'all are talking about the schedules for LSU and the Saints. But for LSU this year, I think to me the game that will be telling is the third week of the year. Of course, everyone's pointing to the season opener against Miami. But the third game, they go to Jordan-Hare Stadium at Auburn. I think that game, third week of the year, it'll be telling to what kind of team LSU's
going to
have this year.
Patrick, with that being said, obviously you want LSU to be 3-0. And you would say if we know we can look in a crystal ball and they win at least one of these games, it could be 2-1. You want, obviously, them to beat Auburn in the West versus Miami. But wouldn't you think that it's – pretty much, we got to wait and see a good start. If we 2-1, let's say you beat Miami, you beat Southeastern, and then you lose to Auburn, or you would lose to Miami, beat Southeastern, and beat Auburn. I think either way, if you're 2-1,
you're in good shape.
You have to wait and see what's going to happen. You can't be like, oh, well, we were 2-0, and we lost to Auburn, the season's over.
We talked about this while you were out on break. Here's the problem. If you lose to Auburn or lose to Auburn, you're not beating Georgia at Tiger Stadium, you're not beating Alabama at Tiger Stadium.
Well, you see, to me, that...
So there you got three losses.
So
right
wait,
there.
You could have expectations where, and it's not unreasonable because no one's going to expect you to win, is to win one of those games, whether it's Georgia at home or Alabama at home, that if you are training and heading in the right direction, I'm not saying, we're going to beat Alabama, beat Georgia. No, you got to be realistic. But that could be an upset type scenario where you win at least one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why
upset.
I look at, like, hey, can you somehow find a way to win in Tiger Stadium against Alabama or Georgia?
Now, I'm not saying you got Georgia.
No, now LSU fans say, man, listen, I would take it any day of the year because just the way we are right now is that somehow can we beat Alabama? People are like, come on, beat Alabama? If they beat Alabama, they could go 6-6. I mean, it's almost, how people look at Saban and Alabama right now. But can you somehow find a way to win one of those games at home against Alabama or Georgia.
Congratulations to Lisa Gaspard. Just won a family four-pack of tickets to the Louisiana Sportsman Show, Deer, Duck, and Fishing Expo at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, July 20th through the 22nd. Listen to Sports Talk 4 to 8 again tomorrow for another chance to win. Tickets are valued at $40. If you want to purchase tickets, just go to LouisianaSportsmanShow.com right now. We're the station that loves Sportsman's Paradise. Patrick, anything else you want to add, man? Patrick, anything else?
I would say the other game, that maybe people aren't talking about is the game against Nick Fitzgerald in Mississippi State at home. Last year Mississippi State they really just blew out LSU
right
in Starkville last year. I think that'll be interesting too to see how Nick Fitzgerald does against Dave Aranda's defense. This year. So,
well, you know what, Patrick? I look at Mississippi State as like where they're at right now. That I would say I'd be disappointed if LSU don't beat Ole Miss at home. I'd be disappointed if you don't win at Arkansas. I think Mississippi State at home, considering what occurred last year. I mean, who knows with Jimbo at Texas A&M? So I look at Mississippi State. You could get off, to a great start, but when you play in Mississippi State Bulldogs simply because what occurred.
This is not the Mississippi State Bulldogs of a few years
ago.
Well,
they got
LSU,
be coming
LSU
in
owned them.
Because of their quarterback and the experience and coming in with a lot of confidence. So what? You got him in Tiger Stadium. I just think that could be one of those games that LSU better pack a lunch and come to play. And because Mississippi State did put a whooping on LSU last year.
Getting back to our rankings of the LSU and Saints games that excite you the most at 20, Saints and Ravens at Ravens, October 31st, Halloween, on at 3:05 p.m. And we talked about it. It's the only team that Drew Brees has not beaten. This likely could be the last time Drew Brees faces the Baltimore Ravens.
But think of that combination. Not only Drew Brees, like you said, whether the Chargers or the Saints uniform, Sean Payton, now obviously as the head coach Saints, he has not beaten them. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be a game that if you look at your resume and you look at when you look back on your career, you go, damn, can you believe we did all these games and we never beat the Baltimore Ravens? Well, I think that's something, and every football player has that pride, their ego. They were like, man, we got to be able to beat the Baltimore Ravens on the road after the bye come October the 21st. And you're talking about who's going to be playing quarterback. I mean, you look at the Cleveland Browns, and you were talking about I think it's going to be Tyrod Taylor.
It could be Lamar Jackson week two. For the Ravens.
I still don't think that's going to be too early in the season that it's still going to be going with Flacco.
Yeah, but I think Flacco is injury prone as he is with the back ailments he's had. I don't know if his body's going to hold up. That's why they ended up ultimately drafting Lamar
Jackson. That
would
be like really seven games into the season. It's almost at the halfway point. So Lamar Jackson.
The Ravens did say they're going to use a two-quarterback system.
Yeah.
You're going to see Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, that I could see certain plays, right. In that.
Look, Brees will be 43 the next time the Saints and Ravens are scheduled to meet in 2022. So this is probably the last shot he's going to have at the Ravens.
Yeah, if you played a percentage, you would think so. But again, when I said this about an hour and a half, 2 hours ago, whatever it might be, that what I want to see, and if I'm an offensive defensive line coach for the Saints, I want to challenge the team. Okay, you know what? We've played the Ravens. They've kicked our ass in the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at all the skilled people, what they're doing, you're like, oh, okay, we got to do this and that. But when I look at the offensive and defensive line, it's like, whoa, man, we got manhandled.
Well, that's when they had, they had T. Sizzle. Obviously, they still got him, but they had Holinata.
Who went to the Lions, yeah.
They had Ellerbe even on that defense.
They've just had our number, and I still think, they made plays defensively. They get takeaways. I know Drew had a game. He might have threw, I think, a couple of picks, if not two or three picks of – God, I'm trying to think when that occurred, but it was one game that one linebacker, I want to say, had two interceptions against Drew. But when you look at, we need to run the ball. We need to keep the Ravens off balance. We need to run the ball. We try to run, and it was like half a yard. stuffed, nothing. So all of a sudden, we have to throw the ball. And that's why I say I would challenge the offensive and defensive lines, can we win in the trenches? You know, can we set the tone? And against the Ravens, that has not happened. I know for a dozen years, they haven't played every year. But when they played the Ravens, the Saints have gotten whipped on the offensive and defensive line.
Yeah, they played them 2006, 10, and 14, all losses under the Peyton and Breeze era. At number 19 on our list, Saints and Giants. It's easy to – anytime Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. are going against New Orleans, it's always fun. 19 on our list, you got Saquon Barkley. You're going to see him go up against the Saints, the number 2 overall draft pick.
So what did the Giants win? 3 games last year?
Yeah.
See, to me, that's one of my dark horses in the NFC.
Oh, yeah.
That I think they can come, they can go from the outhouse to the, not necessarily the
penthouse. They're not going to be down long.
The penthouse, but be a wild card team. I don't think they're going to overtake the Eagles. But I think the Cowgirls, the Redskins, I think the Giants are better than them. I would say the Cowboys might come out last in the division. Boy, I would love that.
You would love that, huh?
Oh, hell yes. What are you? And we whoop them? That would, if we can't win a Super Bowl, but like that occurred to the Jerry Jones, still trying to figure out what he's going to do. But the Giants, I'm telling you, they one of those dark horses. That's going to be a tough game come the end of September, September the 30th at New York. Right now I have the Saints going 4-1 and either losing to Atlanta or at New York to start the season, the first 5 games.
Schedule makers were kind to the Saints, though. They didn't have them going to New York in December. They got them going in September. Rick and Slidell coming back for you, and also number 18 and 17 on our list. This is Sports Talk here on WWLAMFM.com. Welcome back to Sports Talk. Bobby and Christian here. Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focused at PFF underscore Steve, joining us now. Hey, Steve, how you been?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Good. Look, when I hear your voice, I get excited because I know the football is right around the corner. So good stuff to have Steve Palazzolo on. Steve, you guys did, among all the analytics you guys do, you did an interesting one about top wide receivers on slant routes, and Michael Thomas ended up making some of the highest wide receiver ratings.
Yeah, I mean, he's up there in a lot of them for us. And, yeah, he does a really nice job of using his body on slants. And, you know, I think one of the things for him coming out of Ohio State was his route running. That was just really, really good. And I think when you pair that, of course, with one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the NFL and Drew Brees, you're going to get good results. So I think it's both guys working together. But, yeah, Thomas, as a route runner, has really been fantastic his first 2 years.
Now, Steve, with that being said, you look at receptions and the impact that you have just coming out of college and in the NFL, and all of a sudden you're setting records. And that being, you mentioned Michael Thomas with the Saints, but Jarvis Landry, how would you describe the difference between Jarvis Landry, who's now parlayed in a bigger contract with the Browns, leaving the Dolphins, to like Michael Thomas as far as their numbers? Obviously, Odell Beckham Jr. with the Giants and what he's done gets a lot of attention. But when you look at, because there's LSU interest there, and then also Michael Thomas with the Saints, when you look at Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, and Michael Thomas, just compare how y'all break those receivers down and where you think they're at to begin their careers in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at those three guys, I mean, Odell Beckham, if he is healthy and playing at his best, I think he's the top guy in that trio. And I think Michael Thomas has a chance to maybe, you know, challenge him the way he has played these last couple of years. But Odell Beckham does have that special ability to play, you know, with speed and win on the deep routes, but also win as a route runner, create separation and win in contested situations. I think he just has the total package when healthy. Michael Thomas probably just a tick below that. Jarvis Landry is kind of his own man when it comes to style. I mean, he's a pure slot receiver who does not get targeted at or beyond the line of scrimmage a whole lot. So it's a lot of short passes. And I know because he never really tested well and he's not really a great athlete, there's a lot of people who
Steve, you said not a great athlete. I think LSU fans would beg to differ there, because if you got in a barroom fight, you want Jarvis Landry on your side. So I think he's athletic enough. It's just that, come on, if he was with Drew Brees, you play with Ryan Tannehill. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You have to look at who's throwing you the ball also.
I'm just talking about his pure movement skills, his pure testing skills. But my point is that on the field, he's still extremely productive. He's still making things happen. The reception totals are inflated because he's getting so many short passes, but you know, he's making the most of what he has on in the short pass game. But again, a season like last year, 112 receptions for 8.8 yards a pop, you know, that's a lot of short passes inflating those reception totals. I think he is very good at what he does, understanding
right.
how to get open, understanding the underneath stuff. I do think he's just a completely different receiver, though, when you compare him to an Odell Beckham or Michael Thomas.
Well, and Steve, so you look at then, with that being the case, in your opinion, that what he's going to do with Cleveland? I mean, Tyrod Taylor, you don't know, Baker Mayfield, if he plays. Look what Cleveland paid him. So is that more like, okay, move the chains, possession-type receiver, and the value that comes with that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little more than I probably would have paid for him, but I think right. when you look at the value of slot receivers, I think they're much higher than we think. And the fact that, you know, being able to win from the slot is as valuable as being able to win on the outside in today's NFL, and we have some very interesting numbers over at Pro Football Focus that have backed that up, that our guys have dug up in recent years. So with Landry in that system, I think I would have some concerns about him from a production standpoint if Tyrod is playing, because Tyrod is a little bit more boom or bust with the way he plays. He's not going to take the short pass as efficiently as some other quarterbacks, and he's going to be driving the ball down the field a little bit more. I do think, you know, Baker Mayfield, I'm a huge fan of his, and I do think when he eventually takes over, will make good use of Jarvis Landry, and he will be a nice complement to, say, Josh Gordon stretching the field and David right. Njoku being in the middle of the field play at tight end. So I do think they need to get a little bit more move the chains type of production out of Landry than maybe the Dolphins did, but I think he could be utilized pretty well as a complement to Josh Gordon.
Steve Palazzolo, mixing it up with him, Pro Football Focus at PFF underscore Steve. Steve, when I look at fantasy impacts, I know you guys do a lot of stuff with fantasy. Who are some of the running back leaders in fantasy points per touch?
Yeah, I mean, when you're, I don't have it off the top of my head. I can look it up real quick. I got this right up on profootballfocus.com, and I know what you're getting at. It's Alvin Kamara last year. I don't know if he can keep that up this year. He was so good. I don't want to take anything away from what he did last year, because he was so incredible and actually set the record for elusive rating, our number of basically saying, how well did you do away from your offensive line, on your own, missing tackles, and creating yards after catch. It's Alvin Kamara, his season last year. So it's going to be tough to maybe maintain that, especially if he has to pick up the slack from Mark Ingram early on or maybe get a few more touches. But so dynamic in the pass game. Love the way the Saints used him, moving him around, playing a little bit of wide receiver, catching the ball out of the backfield. So slippery when he gets the ball in his hand. So, yeah, Kamara's rookie season was one of the best we've seen in recent years.
Now, Steve, with that being said, and obviously they were up for when you look at rookie of the year and getting everything done, what is your take on Hunt, Kareem Hunt, and what he accomplished? How would you compare, because we want to be objective here, because Kareem Hunt, and you look at what how he exploded coming out of Toledo and what he meant to the Chiefs. But when you look at Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt, I mean, is it like 1 and 1A, or how do you describe them as far as going into their sophomore seasons?
Yeah, I mean, definitely when we look at what they did last season, I think it was 1 and 1A. I mean, you have to give Kareem Hunt the credit. He had 152 more carries than Kamara. So, you know, just from a volume standpoint, he was able to maintain his rushing production over a little bit longer period of time. But I like what both guys bring to the table. I was a big fan of Hunt coming out of Toledo. He was actually our top graded running back from a pure production standpoint his senior year at Toledo. And we saw that translate as a rookie. And it's just that incredible balance that he has. That was the word that kept coming to mind. His balance and Kamara's slipperiness, we'll say, is what helps those guys force missed tackles. And, you know, Kamara was the best at, on a per snap basis, essentially, at, you know, creating missed tackles and yards after contact. But Hunt had 61 missed tackles forced as a runner. That was 13 more than any other running back in the NFL. So I love what both guys did, again, independent of their offensive line. I think that's the most important thing when you look at running backs. Some running backs are so dependent on their run blocking that they can't create if they're sitting behind a bad offensive line or they don't have plays blocked perfectly. I thought I think Hunt and Kamara showed that even when the line isn't great in front of them, they could still produce.
Now, Steve, looking at the quarterback position, obviously look at the NFC South. Cam Newton still with the Panthers, Matt Ryan with the Falcons, and our own Drew Brees with the Saints. Now, when you look at productive quarterbacks that are now changing teams, you might have more examples, but just looking at Alex Smith, and he was a winner of the Chiefs, now going to the Redskins. Kirk Cousins now going to the Vikings, 4,000-yard passer. Now, didn't win anything. But what is your take when you look at those type quarterbacks who are legit and moving teams? Who you think is going to have maybe the most success? How y'all analyze things going into the 2018 season?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at Cousins going to the Vikings, he was rumored to be doing his homework and looking for the best situation, and I think he found it. You know, the Vikings had maybe the best wide receiver core in the NFL with Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. Those guys were the best in the NFL at making contested catches, so they can create those big plays even if they're not open. But they're also really good route runners as well. They do know how to create separation. And I think Cousins, from a number standpoint, is going to benefit from going to a dome and just playing indoors, which really does help inflate passing stats. And it's a cleaner way to throw the football. Passer rating is 6 points higher in domes than it is in outdoor games. And I think Cousins took that into consideration, saying, hey, we're going to play 8 games indoors in Minnesota, another game indoors against Detroit every single season. So I think statistically Cousins is going to do pretty well. And that's going to give the Vikings a chance. And with that pretty good defense and the potential they have in the pass game, I think Alex Smith, I think he'll be good, not great. I mean, it'll be the story of his career. Last year was a career season. I think it'll be very difficult to duplicate what he did, where he was the most efficient deep passer in the entire NFL last season, not really in line with the rest of his career. So I expect him to regress a little bit and be hurt a little bit by the fact that KC's playmakers were so good last year. It's still a nice scheme in Washington, but they just don't have the same wide receiver firepower that Alex Smith had last season.
Steve Palazzolo at PFF underscore Steve. Pro Football Focus is where you can find him. Steve, we'll catch up with you during the season, man. Thanks.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks,
all right, there he goes. Bobby and Christian, this is Sports Talk. We'll get to our list again, ranking the top 28 games between the Saints and LSU. This is Sports Talk here on WWLAMFM.com. Bobby and Christian hanging out here on Sports Talk. Rick and Slidell, what's going on, Rick? You're on WWL.
Hey, guys. I'm gonna make a couple, a few comments on LSU this year, and then I want to hear what Bobby has to say about my comment. I'm just going to hang up and listen because I'm driving. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. I think LSU is going to catch a lot of people off guard. Let me tell you why. I think in their skill positions, their wide receivers, the year before last, DJ Chark, he caught, what, one or two passes prior to last year, and he broke out in a big way. I think they're going to have two, maybe three wide receivers that break out in a big way this year. Running back, I think they're going to be an average SEC adequate running back by committee team. Quarterback, on paper, it looks like this Burrow kid is going to be a step up last year, to Danny Etling. And I think their offensive line with the two JUCO guys coming in and a couple freshmen, they should be about where they were last year, about even. Tight ends, they're going to be an upgrade. Their DBs are elite. They're Alabama-style SEC elite DBs, and they got the best linebacker in America. But here's where they're going to win, and you're going to see a big change. Last year, their defensive line was worn out. They were having guys playing 80 plays, 80 snaps a game. This year, they got 2-3 deep almost across the line. And that's where we're going to see LSU beat up on some people. And I understand they got a tough schedule, but they have an Alabama defensive line this year. And this is the first time they've had it in a long time. And that defensive line is going to win them some ball games. And I'd like to hear Bobby's comments. I appreciate it.
All right, Rick. Yeah, when I look, I'm not worried about the defense. I think Coach Aranda, Dave Aranda, they'll have the defense ready to roll. And I think it's going to come from week one. Now, what's intriguing is a couple of players that you look, however they came to town, or I don't know if I even pronounce his name right, Breeden Fehoko, Now, look, the transfer from Texas Tech. So you look at different guys in a rotation. And Rashad Lawrence, but he's the only returning starter in the three-man defensive line. So when you look at that rotation, like you're talking about the depth, you know, five-star rated 2017 prospect, but Tyler Shelvin, who did not play last season due to academic eligibility issues. So when you look at what they're going to do defensively, I'm not worried about that. Then you talk about wide receiver. I think this individual, and really if you look at LSU wide receivers, they've had NFL skill set. And not necessarily that production on the college level compared to what they've done in the NFL. We just talked about Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham Jr., but another Texas Tech transfer, Jonathan Giles. Is it Giles or Giles?
Giles.
Giles. Here's a guy, I know they're going to get his hands on the ball. He's going to be playing with a lot of confidence. I could see him having a 1,000-yard receiving type year and double-digit touchdowns. Now, the one thing that I'm still concerned with and we kind of take for granted is the running back position. When you have the running backs that LSU has had, that I'm talking about amongst the best in the whole country, you could say, oh, we just plug and play. We put someone else in. That's what I'm still concerned with. Chris, I don't know. What do you think with the running backs?
Because I think they're inexperienced.
You look at Darius Geis.
That's a big loss.
And Fournette. Loss. I mean, come on. We don't have those kind of guys.
I have Darrell Williams. I think the inexperience level for LSU, they're inexperienced at the wrong spots, the skill position spots. Now, we talked to Coach O. The offensive line he feels really good about. You should feel real good. I agree with you. I'm not worried about the defense. Dave Aranda is going to have them ready to go. Now, the problem for me is, do they have enough depth on the defensive side of the football? Because eventually you're going to be in ball games, slugfest kind of ball games. Are you going to be able to get enough rotation, guys in there in a rotation along the defensive line? If there's a concern for me, it's at skill position for LSU. I'm not unequivocally going to get up there and say, oh, Joe Burrow is a definite upgrade over Danny Etling. You'd like to believe so, but until I see him play, I'm not going to say that.
Well, and look at the games that are close. Look, it cost LSU in the bowl game. Come on, you got to make a field goal that's mm-hmm. basically like an extra point. Cole Tracy. I think Cole Tracy could be that X factor to have two or three different wins. If you lose them by two and you have a game-winning kick or whatever, you have to make it.
That was their bugaboo last year.
And so you look, Greg McMahon is full-time special teams coordinator coming in. So you look at Tracy now. Think about this. Division II Assumption. Not Assumption Mustangs in Assumption Parish in Louisiana, but that's where he went. He was 67-67 extra points, 27-29 field goal attempts. His only miss was 45, 52 yards. He had a long of 53. He won the 2017 Fred Mitchell Award, given to the top kicker. So, I mean,
efficiency.
Cole Tracy could be that X factor.
Efficiency and accuracy. This is Sports Talk here on WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.